Welcome, everybody. Bienvenidos a esta edición of the 2-on-3 podcast. Hercules Gomez, Sebastian Salazar with you. Herc, it's been a while, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, all things considering. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm recovered from our last episode. I have made notes in our rundown here to move any talk of Carlos Vela. And there's just one little thing to the very end. Because look.
Oh, great. This wasn't in the rundown, by the way.
I don't care what you say. I don't care what the YouTube comments say. I don't care what the people in my
Instagram DMs
say to me about Carlos Vela. But you know what hurt? When my own mother, who listens to this podcast, yells at me about my feelings about Carlos Vela. That was harsh, dude. You know that was hard for me.
Yeah, it's funny because your dear wife sent us I think she tweeted a picture of you guys arguing, you and your mother arguing over dinner.
Right after the last episode came out. Yeah.
Correct.
So you're starting family problems for me. I appreciate that very much. Or maybe as most of my problems, I've probably started this one.
Sounds about right. Accurate.
All right. So look, we got a few things to get to. We've got some debates, some topics, but I think we got to get to news first, right? Because we're in an era where news is happening very quickly. I'll make a point to say right here, it's Thursday, May 21st at 1:11 p.m. Eastern time. So we may say something here that either by the time this is published or by the time somebody listens to it is somewhat dated, but we'll try and take that into account. Let's start with kind of the pandemic's impact on the Mexican Football League, right? The closest, I think you would say, ally in some way of the national team or the closest product anyway. So Ascenso and Descenso has been scrapped, right? Promotion and relegation in Mexico has been scrapped for the next half decade at least. At least it's been put on the table. A second division will be now formed that'll be developmental. The detail's not exactly clear, Herc, but it looks like there will be age and probably foreigner restrictions, which I think depending on how you cut that could be either good or bad for Mexican soccer, right?
It depends how they do it, because if when you talk about foreigner restrictions, how does that come into play? Because before it was you can be a foreigner as long as you were registered in the Mexican Federation by the age of 19. So that still comes into play. It's only going to encourage these clubs to go out and scout at a younger age and bring them to Mexico to then be considered domestic products. And I have air quotations right now in my hands. So it all depends how that goes forth. We don't know. We don't have all the details yet. But every single day I hear more and more, or I see more and more, it just smells like the MLS blueprint.
Yeah, you always keep going back to that. I'm sure we'll touch on that throughout the podcast. It's obviously going to change dramatically the landscape of soccer in Mexico and professional soccer, right? Like how guys get jobs. Obviously, yeah. That has a huge impact on the national team. In all this chaos, there's also a Liga de Balompié Nacional, like a third almost.
The XFL of Mexican soccer. You can
exactly.
Say it.
Perfect. Yes, it's a perfect analogy. But it's got some names behind it. Carlos Salcido, Ramon Morales, just to know.
Well, it's got some names in the management and administrative roles, but until you see some names on the field, it's still very XFL.
Exactly. But the point is that I really think the point I'm trying to make is that there is chaos brewing in professional soccer
Correct.
In Mexico.
Absolutely.
And I think with this formation, the destabilization of the second division, the third division, whatever you want to call this, Liga Balompié, there's going to be new job opportunities, but there's also going to be chaos in that second division and probably some clubs coming and going, which in the end of the day also hurts guys who are trying to find work.
I mean, immediately, if we look at the immediate impact, there's a plethora of players that are without a job now. They're done. Their careers are over. Their livelihoods with their families. They've got to look at different oficios, job fields of how to provide food on the table. It's a harsh reality. This new league, this Liga de Desarrollo, which is going to be like, I believe, a under-23 type league, or under-24, I should say, because they're going to do 23 years old and 11 months, which pretty much they always do. By that age, you should be almost a finished product in Mexico and around the world. And these players, that I will remind people, that sort of league already existed. It was La Segunda División Premier. And that Segunda División Premier was pretty much a graveyard for Mexican soccer products. It already existed. It's just a way of saying, here you go. You have somewhere to apply your trade. You have somewhere. You have a platform for you to play. It's not going to be any better. Well, at least in my opinion, it's not going to be any better than what they already had.
And look, there are so many foreigners taking the top tier jobs in Mexican soccer. It's hard for young Mexican players sometimes to get minutes in Liga MX East. So you do need those tiers kind of down the ladder. And people probably listen and saying, well, what does it affect the national team? What's going on at the third division? I would tell people, just go back and we covered this team. We followed them when we were at the World Cup in Russia. Go back and look at that England team from 2018.
Oh, yeah.
And look at where some of those dudes were playing within 2-3 years of being on England, who was a semifinalist in a World Cup. They're playing in the third and fourth division. They had those – that's a huge part of their development. That does not exist in Mexico, and I think right now it exists even
that's
less.
That's a perfect, perfect example, because if you think about the – most foreign-filled, star-studded foreign league in the world, it's the Premier League. Mm. And for many years, people would say, well, the Premier League is great, but the English national team, not so much. So that's a perfect example. Now, in order for Mexico to get there, there have to be certain sacrifices by these ownership groups to make sure these players get the exposure and the development they need.
So let's talk about the direct impact on the national team's schedule, because what was – really going to happen this year is we were going to start to see Tata Martino in World Cup qualifiers. And obviously that has now been pushed back. This from Victor Montagliano, the CONCACAF president. He said the hex will almost certainly have to be changed. The hex is the format that we've seen for as long as you and I can effectively remember in CONCACAF qualifying. You got to go back, really before into the 80s to see the last time they did what was a smaller tournament. It somewhat resembled the hex, but it was different. The hex has been your and my experience in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. And this was probably going to be the last instance of it anyway before we went to a different system of World Cup qualifying for an expanded World Cup. One thing that I would say where I think this could affect Mexico, and I don't know that it's like on the line of qualifying for a World Cup or not. The one thing Montagliani said is that it would be a much bigger tournament. When I hear much bigger, Herc, I think much more democratic, and you and I have talked about this a lot. Any CONCACAF event, and this is very unfair, I think, and even I say this as a Mexico fan, whether it's the Gold Cup, and certainly now the Hex, and now the Hex, where the top six teams are going in off FIFA rankings, which is totally ridiculous, that favored Mexico to an overwhelming extent, an advantage that Mexico, frankly, in CONCACAF should not need. I think whatever format we're going to get coming out of this is at least going to level the playing field a little bit. It may not knock Mexico out of a World Cup, but for some of those other teams that thought they were going to slide in via the hex, I think it might be tougher sledding.
Yeah, but I have a problem with this because it gets very political on the type of games you schedule and the risk for scheduling said games for you to move
that's
up
why
the rankings. That's
why the FIFA rankings has to go, and I don't think they can do that anymore.
Yeah,
I
agree with you.
It stops them from doing that, and I think that – it's going to hurt Mexico, but I think it's more fair.
It is more fair, but let's be honest. If Mexico competed with three teams in CONCACAF and you ranked those three teams, maybe two of those three teams qualify for a World Cup spot. I'm being honest. That could be the same for maybe the U.S. and Costa Rica. We're stretching it a bit, but that's the difference in talent in CONCACAF from the top-tier teams historically, the Mexico's, the U.S., the Costa Rica's. And the rest, there is a huge gap, a huge downfall. And listen, it's not Mexico's, it's not the U.S.'s, it's not Costa Rica's responsibility to grow the game within CONCACAF. But it is CONCACAF's responsibility, so I understand what they're trying to do. But the only ones who are going to suffer for it are the Mexico's of the world and the U.S. men's national teams of the world.
It'll be interesting. Like, if it were to go back to, like, people don't remember this. I don't remember this. I had to look this up on Wikipedia. I went back into the 70s and the 80s. Like, how did CONCACAF used to do its World Cup qualifying when you didn't have the time and the resources to fly everybody around for home and aways? They'd fly people into one place for a tournament, knock it out, and there would be some surprises. And Mexico missed some World Cups in that format. So if things were to go to an extreme here where it had to be a tournament-type format, then I think Mexico could be in some trouble because
of course, it's almost like a one-off. And you know how this is because it happened in 2013, the World Cup qualifying campaign for Mexico. You start off on the bad foot and all of a sudden with the way the Mexican media is, the pressure within the fans, that whole organization, that whole country, the culture that is football in that country, it starts snowballing into a negative mode and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And before you know it, you need Sanssouci to bail you out, and you go to the World Cup with 11 points.
There you go. I was looking even further in the history books. You know, the last time Mexico kind of, you know, did not qualify via the field was ahead of the 1982 World Cup. And it was a tournament. And they had a tournament. El Salvador went.
Correct.
And they had a tournament. I think the tournament was actually in Honduras. And they tied game after game after game when all they needed was a win to go through. In this scenario, I'm imagining that happening and the pressure building at home.
Yep. Exactly.
As things go. So look, it's way off. We don't know what that format's going to look like, but it will be different from the Hex. I think we can say now, rest in peace, Hex. I don't think we're going to see that ever again.
I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I love the home and away. I do love the home and away with Mexico and the U.S. I think that's super special. And to lose that in qualifying, and we probably will, is going to stink because you're going to have to find another way to give us U.S.-Mexico now.
Well, if I'm talking, you know, solely from a U.S. men's national team perspective, that was something to hang your hat on, that you dominated the Hex for so many years, so many cycles, and Mexico struggled. So you take that away. Now it's like, well, where do we go from here?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So look, I mentioned before it's May 21st. There's some news around Liga MX that's expected this week. The cancellation of this Clausura season. It just doesn't look like it's going to be feasible. We also know this for sure already. This just came out this week. All of the on-field events between Liga MX and Major League Soccer have been canceled. I think you know that happens because MLS knows that something's coming from down south. They're not going to roll that out if they don't need to. So the Liga MX MLS All-Star Game is gone. Campeones Cup is gone for this year. Leagues Cup is gone for this year. And then just yesterday, we find out Santos Laguna has 8 players who test positive for COVID. So
8 out of the 22 that they tested. They're still waiting on 26 results.
Yes, thank you for clarifying, right? There could be even more come. So look, when we say, you know, everybody's living this, the pandemic's impact on whatever you're doing is total. The impact on Mexican football, whether you talk about the sport or the industry, Herc, has been total.
Without a doubt. And this is why this whole, do we continue Liga MX? Do we do neutral sites? Do we do bubble cities? Do we do all these things are coming into play? And you start, quite frankly, seeing ownership groups that are like, I don't know if I want to go there because I'm going to lose more money if we play. Because I need to pay my players if we play. If we end the season now, we can come to some sort of an agreement with the players, and I don't have to pay them as much. But if I can't fill up the gates, if I can't get my game day sponsorships in, if I can't get the television networks who are already contracted to show these games, to show the games, because also the networks have a say, all of a sudden they can't say, hey, I can't be putting up so many games every so often. I don't have the airtime. If they can't do that, the sponsorship dollars leave. Now the ownership groups are paying more to play than they actually get out of it. So this is why you're seeing this vote come into play. And I think the first vote that was cast out of the 18 teams, not all of them voted, but 7 of them did vote and they wanted the league to end. I believe there was another 6 who said they wanted to continue and a few who said they were unsure of and the others didn't vote. So it's divided and you can see why. Some teams don't see the benefit of continuing. Quite frankly, this goes beyond the sport. What's going on in our homes here in the States is very different than what's going on with the Mexican government and in certain cities around Mexico and the health divisions or health sectors and the information they are giving Mexican soccer officials. So it's pretty much all out of our hands. But what I can tell you right now is this is something that will directly impact the Mexican national team, because like you said, there are only a handful of players that realistically are in Europe that could probably get to the next World Cup. Other than that, you're talking about Liga MX's domestic product. And if they're not active, if they're not playing and other countries are, that's a huge factor.
Sure. And I think we have to acknowledge as well, the Liga MX is not trying to do this league anywhere other than Mexico. You know, the Bundesliga is running because the German government handled the coronavirus in a very specific way. The Korean Baseball League, the Korean Soccer Leagues are running because those governments handled it a certain way. If sports returns in the United States, it will be because the governments locally or nationally handled it and got things controlled in a certain way. As you say, what we're living here is different than in Mexico. And until things are under control, both here and in Mexico, it's hard to imagine any sports coming back anytime soon. because we are not as advanced, we have to say, on this side of the ocean as some people on the other. We've just seen it. That's why they're playing sports.
Yeah, that is why they're playing sports. And this is going to go, it's going to be a trickle-down effect, because we've already seen these competitions between Major League Soccer and MLS canceled. Campeones Cup, Leagues Cup, you know, the MLS All-Star Game. What about CONCACAF Champions League? You know, and these Mexican teams, these MLS teams that are accustomed to playing each other in finals. Well, people forget that the CONCACAF Champions League is run by CONCACAF, and they are the ones who directly benefit from it. So if you're a Mexican team, if you're the Mexican League, if you're MLS, why should you play in this so others make money? If you're going to lose money, if you only have to squeeze in even more games, because to the point we're going to get to if these both of these leagues resume is, it's going to be a game every 3 days for these players. Where can you squeeze these in? That's why we've seen the cancellation of already these MLS Liga MX events.
All right, so let's get into some debate-worthy topics. I've been watching a ton of you all over ESPN Deportes. It's basically what's on my television all day. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. But look, like everybody else, and we've said this, I think, in this space before, everybody's scrambling for things to talk about.
Right.
Like we said, there is no soccer in a lot of places in the world, so we're trying to figure out new ways to discuss the game. And sometimes those new ways are really just old ways, reheated over and over and over again. And you get these great kind of long, reoccurring debates. One of the ones that's popped up since we last sat down is the Chicharito Leyenda debate, which I don't really want to get into because I don't know that there's much of a debate between us. But I think it's a fascinating...
You're in agreement, right?
What's your take? I mean, he is a legend, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely no chance that anyone ever could actually make like an honest case that he's not.
Okay,
but I do think it's a fascinating case study in the Mexican media and then Chicharito, who's not just your like average Mexican player, either in ability, but also seemingly in like he is willing to confront the Mexican media and say like, if you want to doubt me, I'm A, sensitive enough to care, and B, courageous enough to, like, respond.
Yeah, I love that he's courageous enough to respond. I don't understand why he's sensitive enough to respond. Like, that should not bother you at all.
Come on, dude. Come on, this guy is like we just said, there is no debate. You can
right.
see why it would get under his skin when, like, everybody all the time is – when they manufacture debate to be like, is he a legend or not? Like, come on.
But – why? You make millions of dollars a year.
Because he cares.
United, but that's what I'm telling you. Why do you care? You played in Chivas, one of the biggest clubs in Mexico, campeón de goleo there. You went to United. You were the third leading goal scorer in a decade for one of the biggest clubs in the world. From there, you went to Real Madrid. You played with one of the best players ever in the world. You did your thing. You've been to Leverkusen. You scored tons of goals. I believe you were voted the best foreigner in the Bundesliga that year. Why do you care? Why do you care? You're at the point right now in your life where you can do what you want, call your shot. Why do you care what some Joe Schmo in LA or in San Francisco or in Mexico City has to say about you? You should not care. You should be above that. But he does.
Yeah.
And for us, it's great because it gives us a lot to talk about. But he should not care. His actions on the field speak so much louder than whatever anybody could say. Tronco? Is that what really you're going to say about Chicharito? He's a tronco? Okay, you know what a tronco means? That means you're a tree trunk. You're not good with the ball at your feet. That means somebody
right.
sends you a pass, it'll rebound off like it would a tree trunk. Who cares? This guy scored goals against Chelsea. He scored goals in 3 straight World Cups. He's done everything you can possibly do. Call me a tronco a million times over. I still am who I am, and you still are who you are. That's what he should be thinking.
Yeah, I think it's also worth noting, tronco or not, like that's subjective. If you go back and you watch the 2018 World Cup, he made plays.
Well, that
you
first,
know, tronco plays,
goal.
He made
that
plays.
That Chucky Lozano goal against Germany was set up by Chicharito.
Yes, every big play that Mexico, even if you go back to, you know, he scores the goal against South Korea, he's involved in the buildup on the penalty. He is critical. So like, he might not do it in a pretty way, but I think like there is literally no
what
arguing.
What world am I
substance.
Living in right now? Are you giving Chicharito props?
Well, look, I'm the one that says he's the best Mexican player of the moment. I don't want to go down this road because
what did you say?
You are the one that will say Carlos Vela is better,
out.
And then we'll get into that.
Time out. Did you just say Chicharito's the best Mexican player of the moment?
We were talking in MLS. Remember we did the MLS debate? LA, who's the best Mexican player in MLS? You went Vela. I went Chicharito. We yelled at each other for a while.
How could you go Chicharito in MLS?
And there it is. And there it is. And there it is.
What are you doing?
And there it is. Oh, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You that, and there it is. You're gonna, you are the Mexican media right now, menospreciando Chicharito, because you say a guy who's done nothing.
You are insane, menospreciando qué? Look at the stats. One guy had a season for the ages in Major League Soccer. 34 goals, 15 assists, the MVP of that year. He also was on the team that scored the most points in a regular season, a historic record. And you're trying to tell me somebody who's been riding pine in Europe, yes, I understand it's Europe, that comes to Major League Soccer that has yet to do anything is a better player than Carlos Vela?
Riding
the most talented
pine.
Player of his generation.
Riding
the most
pine.
Talented player in this pool.
According to you, that's your subjective opinion. There's no fact involved in that.
I just gave you statistics for facts.
You just made something up. All right, let's move on to the next debate that I've seen around ESPN. Not really a debate, but you know, they're always talking managers. A lot of it has been, you know, who's the best manager in Mexican national team history? Who's the best Mexican manager? Yada, yada, yada. One story that came out that I thought was interesting, and you and I talked about it over on the ESPN FC YouTube channel, is Jurgen Klopp was at one point on the radar of Mexico. Now, this came out 3-4 years ago.
Right.
You know, the first time around, but when there's nothing to talk about, stories get recycled.
Cantu.
Cantu. Guillermo Cantu came out and said, yeah, we had, through a third party, you know, made an offer. Not made an offer, but, you know, tested the waters.
Acercamientos.
Yeah. See what's up. Hey, are you interested? The response was, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'm working in the club game. Obviously, that worked out well for him. I don't know that there's much to take away from that story other than what we talked about when we were talking about it on YouTube, and that is, my goodness, the ambition of the FMF, who can be criticized, and that's the Mexican Federation, for literally everything if you want to, cannot be criticized for who they're going after for the national team coach, especially relative to who everybody else in their region, their competition, is going after as a head coach.
Let's be honest, since the hiring of Sven-Goran Eriksson, FMF has really been ambitious. They go for the sexy pick. They go for the progressive pick. They go for what world's football is dictating to be the hot pick of the moment. This doesn't surprise me. It also doesn't surprise me that it was through a third party and there was no ever, declaration or direct contact with Jurgen Klopp. He's a very difficult man, I would assume, to try to get a hold of, even if you are the Mexican national team. That doesn't surprise me. It surprises me that Mexico thinks they have a shot at him, but shoot your shot, and that they do. And that right there is, for any Mexican national team fan or any fan in general, what you want to see out of your federation, because deep pockets they have. But you want to see, I guess, the aspirations to go with it, the ambition to go with it. And that, como dicen en español, sobra.
Yeah, you have to think about it. This is pre-Liverpool Klopp, so maybe not quite the shine that he has now. But I mean,
can you think of this? If this is pre-Liverpool and this is Dortmund Klopp, that's still very ambitious. Yeah. That's seen beyond what we all see now.
Almost, you give him more credit, right? Like
you have to.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, you can make a case like, all right, take a step back. He wasn't going to make El Tri play like Liverpool. You can make that argument, of course, because the talent that he has at his disposal. But to see that type of, I guess, development in his future, to see that already in him, that's very ambitious.
Sure. And then I think we can see that ambition in the Tata Martino hire too. Like,
that one really upset me.
Why?
Well,
from a U.S. standpoint.
Of course. I mean, he's in your backyard, literally. Yeah, he's in your domestic league.
He's working for you. MLS.
Pretty much, yes. And he also wanted the job. Yeah. It was so easy. And here you go. You give him to your biggest rival. Have him.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. They brought him in the door. And then, you know, it's like, yeah.
As stupid as this sounds, they showcased Tata Martino. Hey, how stupid does this sound? A manager who's been at Barcelona, who's been at the Paraguay national team in World Cups, who's been at the Argentine national team, you showcase him to Mexico. That's what you did.
Right. No, and Mexico was smart to get him. And obviously, I think now there's a plan that seems to be maybe even to this World Cup, next World Cup and beyond. So that forward thinking, you know,
We've said this. I said I would give it to Tata Martino. This is an 8-year plan. You have to ride this wave. We want to do well in Qatar, but our main focus is 2026.
So look, that's one of the conversations, right? Yes, I think Michev, you know, came out and said, you know, they should just give it to him for life. You know, he should stay for life. It'd be good for Mexican soccer. And
who is Hugo Sanchez?
Look, I think anytime you talk about a second cycle, you're going into a rarefied air, right? It's got to be a unique person and a unique situation that worked together for 8 years, and suggesting that anybody's going to be able to work under the pressure cooker that is Mexican, that job with the Mexican press and somewhat dysfunction of the federation for 8 years is a big ask. I would also point out the example that we've seen to give a guy a second go before he's even finished his first go is very risky. And I'm talking about Jurgen Klinsmann.
No, but Jurgen Klinsmann was given his second go after the World Cup.
No, he got a contract renewal before 14. He got a contract renewal before 14 and a promotion.
I was under the assumption that that happened after the World Cup.
No, he had a second World Cup guarantee.
I believe you. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, then you're right about that. There's two sides of this coin. It could either go very well for you or very bad. And obviously for the national team, you could make an argument of he only coached two games in the next hex, and then he was out, and whatever you want to, I guess, determine whether that was successful or not. But that's the chance you're going to take, because since then, U.S. soccer was on the hook for I don't even know how many millions, and they're probably still paying.
There you go. All right, so one of the other debates that's popped up is – and this is a classic, because you can insert anybody's name into this, is blank elite. And in this world, the conversation very recently has been Israel Jimenez, elite. He is touching up against some elite numbers in Europe in an elite place. There's interest from teams that, well, there's air quote interest from teams that I think people would label as elite. Yet there's still some doubt as to whether he could actually, A, play at that level. And then I think even beyond that, get a chance at that level. Like, is it realistic that he would end up at, you know, one of the seven or eight teams that I think you would say are in that top category? I'm just interested in your take, because as we've done these segments, I think over and over again on ESPN FC YouTube, we look at every single club he's linked to, and they're everywhere, right? They're everyone from Wolves up in all leagues. Of all the links that you've seen, is there one that you say, yeah, not just can I buy it, but I like it?
Oh, man.
You want me to read them off to you?
I know which ones you're going to
say. Know them by heart, because we've heard them so much.
Juventus, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man City, Chelsea, United. I know them.
Everybody in England.
Yeah, I know them by heart. Is he elite to play there? I do feel he's elite enough to play there. I liken him to a Firmino. You know, he's that type of player.
You know, he's been more productive than Firmino over the last two seasons.
Of course, yes, I do know that. But I mean in the way he makes others play around him.
Well, would you say Firmino's elite?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay.
But he's
then Jimenez
it.
Over the last two
oh,
years.
Hold on. He's proven last... it. I understand where you're going. He's been better over the last 2 years. But he's proven it at a bigger club like Liverpool and in bigger platforms. Up until this moment, Raul Jimenez's platform is Europa League. That's what it is. He's got one thing going against him, is it's only been 2 years. If you look at his track record in Europe, it's only been – well, actually, not even 2 years. It's been a season and a half, which has been a great season and a half, one of the world's best in that season and a half for what he's done, and arguably the best league in the world. But before that, he was at Atletico. How did that go? He was at Benfica. How did that go? He is how old? 29 years old, I believe. So if we get political on how world soccer works and what clubs could potentially go for a transfer for a player of that age, and also his value, what did Wolves pay for him? He was a record transfer from Benfica. He's got all these factors going against him. Do I feel he's elite enough to play at these big clubs? Absolutely, I do. Do I think it'll happen? No. Let me tell you just really quickly how these
– Wait a sec. You don't think he'll go anywhere? Like, okay, fine. He won't go to PSG, Real Madrid, Barcelona. You don't
not
think
an elite club. No, I don't.
You don't think he'll go to a Manchester United?
No.
Wow.
I don't. He's 20.
You think he'll stay at Wolves? You think he should stay at Wolves is what you're saying.
I think his ceiling right now in the Premier League is a team like Wolves. that's where I think it is. If it's abroad somewhere like La Liga or the Bundesliga, La Liga, I could see him anywhere outside of Atletico, anywhere outside of Barcelona, Real Madrid, maybe a Valencia, a Sevilla type. Yes, I can see that. I don't see him at these 1A clubs. I do not see it at all. And it's not because of his play, because you very well know that sometimes that isn't so much a factor when it comes to world's football and how political it could get. If you're going to offer this man, because I'm sure he's looking for a 4 or 5 year deal, you're going to offer this man a 4 or 5 year deal way up until his mid-30s at an elite club. I don't see an elite club with his track record taking that chance on him. Very quickly, let me tell you the clubs that I was linked to during my playing career. So you see how this gets muddled, okay? I was linked to Wolfsburg, Augsburg, West Brom Albion. I was linked to Grasshoppers in Sweden. And what other club was I linked to? Chivas. Okay. So these things don't, you shouldn't always buy into it, because half the time it's like these third party interests that we hear about Jurgen Klopp. It's an agent offering somebody, and a reporter gets wind of the offer of said agent to said club, and it goes viral.
Grasshoppers in Sweden or Switzerland?
Switzerland, I'm sorry.
There you go. I would hate to have you show up in Stockholm thinking you're going to play
right
Grasshoppers.
And there was –
and South, buddy.
Hold on. And a lot of this were through the same vein of somebody is offering me. It was Jurgen Klinsmann talking to these clubs for me. And these clubs were like, yeah, sure, we'll look at the guy. Santos was like, no, they're not going to look at anything. You're not going to go try out any of these clubs. You're 30 years old. If they want you, they put in a bid. All right, how much is the bid? They figured out how much I made. They figured out how much Santos wanted. And they're like, we're not touching the guy.
So let me ask you this, let me make this point, because I do think there is one. You know, I broke them into categories here, right? Bayern, Juve, Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG, City, Liverpool. That's the elite. Maybe Atletico, like maybe
I think Atletico's elite, yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's your top eight. That's it. Like, I don't – it's not that I don't think he can play there. I just don't – I don't really see.
What about Spurs? Is that elite for you?
No. So I
could potentially see him at a Spurs, and I agree.
So Spurs, you know, Harry Kane leaves. Arsenal, Aubameyang leaves.
I'd even throw Everton in there. It's a massive club.
Sure, and you know, obviously now has big pockets, really deep pockets as well. You know, to go along with the history, so they could be in the bidding. But Everton, to me, you know, if we talk Everton from Wolves. Really? Like, to me, that's not much of a move.
Historically.
Okay, but Arsenal.
Got deep pockets, and he's got Ancelotti. Yeah.
But they're not big six. I want big six.
Okay, you want big six for Raul.
If you're going to,
I don't think you're going to get big six for Raul.
Well, Arsenal is.
Well, hold on. You're right. I could see Arsenal, maybe. And I could see Spurs, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me make the case here for Manchester United, because I think it's actually a solid one. They are one of the few clubs. Look, everyone will be hit financially hard by the pandemic.
Of course.
They are probably one of the more well-insulated because of how advanced their financial structures are. They'll probably lose a lot. Like, if you actually hear the number that United will lose, it'll be big. But they'll still make a lot. And so I think United will be uniquely positioned in the coming transfer markets. They're not a club that's long-term. They need guys who are producing now.
Who would they rather have? And you know who I'm going to throw out there.
Who?
You know Harry Kane or Raul Jimenez?
Well, I don't know that Manchester United, I think Harry Kane's going to have options. I think he's going to have better options than Manchester United. And that's the other point. Manchester United is no longer picking from the elite.
I don't want to go into the rabbit hole of Harry Kane's options, but yeah, United is a contender.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a massive club. Massive club. And we've gone through this with Craig Burley on FC numerous times. And if they go the route of that big signing, it'll be Harry Kane. If they go the Jadon Sancho route and sprinkle in some other players, in an off chance that they call it a one-off, they need to win now, Raul Jimenez is in the conversation.
Jorge Mendes is the agent. Yeah. You know, he's done dealings with them before. I think also, like, we always talk about it, right? And maybe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wouldn't care about this, but clubs know what they're doing. And if there's any club that can understand the value of a Mexican international, 100% it's Manchester United. And
absolutely.
That
they've done before. Why do you think they're interested in Chucky?
Totally, and don't think that the whole, you know, Pulisic to Chelsea, same deal. All of these.
Do you think he's worth $75 million in the transfer market, if not for him being American?
But, and I think that factors into Jimenez's value.
Of course.
I think big clubs who think about, you know, I don't know about Wolves. I don't think Wolves necessarily – Wolves is a bad example because they're kind of a weird transitional club anyway. But I don't think most clubs care about the international market as much as the big clubs do. But those big clubs are very aware of where guys are
from. Do you follow Wolves' Twitter handle in North America?
Yes, I have the Wolves Mexico jersey. Yes, I bought it.
They
embraced
promote
it.
And embrace the hell out of Raul Jimenez.
But I don't think that's why they signed him. I don't think that played
No. Because they were promoted and they needed bargain players. But that is why it came into part of that transfer after that first season.
Sure. This is also important to me. I mean, it's May 21st. Last night I'm watching Tudene. Shout out to our colleagues over there. They're playing, all the best of, and they're playing the 2006 Champions League final, which is Barcelona Arsenal. And Rafa Marquez marking Thierry Henry. And, you just see.
Is that the one he bodies him?
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah. Henry had his moments too. I mean, seeing Henry in 2006 is like, wow, what a just incredible player. But anyway, here is Rafa Marquez at the elite level in the biggest game starting on the team that won it. And it just rings true. Every time we come, every time we sit down, every time we get around this national team, I come back to the thing you told me in Russia outside the stadium after they lost to Brazil. There's just not enough Mexican players at the elite level. And I go back, and that was 2006.
Right.
That was supposed to be the door flung open, right, to Mexican players getting into big, important
clubs.
Well,
it was. It was.
But the only Mexican
you have Guardado, you have Salcido, you have Mesa, who's a center back who went abroad as well. You had Aaron Galindo. You had who am I missing? I'm missing a few other guys.
Pavel Pardo, Osorio, the guys Osorio, who thank with you.
That was that generation's because of guys like Rafa Marquez. But then since there was a gap.
And what I would say even about those guys, Herc, is they never got to his level.
Of course,
they never got to the elite level. They never played for an elite club. And so he gets to the mountaintop and you expect, okay, there'll be more, maybe not a ton, but there will be more. And the only other guy that even gets close to that mountaintop is Chicharito. And he gets there for a moment in moments. It's not how Rafa Marquez got there in that kind of consolidated fashion. So here we have, and in 2018, I'm depressed outside a stadium in Russia, and you're like, the Mexican players just aren't playing at a good enough level, buddy. And it's like, duh. Se cayó el 20. Yeah. So when I hear you tell me that Jimenez shouldn't make that jump, oh, man, dude.
Not that he shouldn't. I don't think he
will. Or that he won't. It's overwhelmingly, to me, it's just such a bummer. Because I think,
it's a business, Ed. Why would a club take that type of chance on a player who's aging out, who's maybe even plateaued,
come on.
Seb, look at the body of work. If 18 months are enough
for strikers in the world right now are 30, 31.
Yes, with a body of work. Name the best strikers and we can go through the body of work. And you know this, when you have 18 months body of work, are you going to spend, because what was it, 40-something million to Wolves? What do you think he's going to command? It's got to be in the 60 to 70 range, right?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. We don't know numbers now.
Yeah, right, with the pandemic. Yeah. It's fine. But what I'm saying is that's a gamble. Oh, man.
Yeah. No, I feel you. It's just you look at the players who have chances to get to the mountaintop, and probably 3 years ago I wouldn't have put Jimenez he wouldn't have even been in my thoughts.
2 years ago we were on the same podcast and you were crushing Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, even sooner, more recent than that, it wasn't until he really got to Wolves and maybe a couple months in that he started finishing. And that's when I thought his game took the next step. Because a forward who can do everything else but can't finish is kind of useless. And he did everything else so well that when he started finishing, it was like, oh, this guy's awesome. This guy's really, really
good.
He's
a very complete player. And he's in a system right now that caters. That's the other thing. I've seen this so many times. And I don't want to say he's a system player. Like we say in other sports, like football, he's a system quarterback,
Yeah.
But he's proven it in this system. He's proven it with this coach. He's proven it in this environment. It's not always the case when you leave.
Right. But look, the whole point of this podcast was always to get to El Quinto Partido, right?
Right.
And I think everything in Mexican soccer, all of the angst revolves around expectations. And as long as Mexican players are still at Wolves and not United or City or Liverpool, we can hope for like El Quinto Partido, but we can't expect it.
And, I'll tell you what. If there are Mexican players at Wolves, that means you're playing Europa League. You're closer to El Quinto Partido than you think.
Okay, but there's one right now. You know, it's not everybody. It's not everybody. Another guy that's kind of at that level who I want to move to, and I think we'll skip Chucky because, look, you and I talk about Chucky all the time. If people want to know our takes on that, go to the ESPN FC YouTube channel. Here's a guy we don't talk a lot about, and that's Tecatito. He's very interesting to me for a variety of reasons, but one, his agent just gave an interview on ESPN Deportes. I sent you the clip. I'm sure you saw it. One of the teams that he was linked to was kind of that next level up. And when you see an agent name a team, you give it, it's a little bit more than just like a useless website transfer rumor, right? This held for me a little bit. Inter Milan was the team. And I think that, yes, okay, wow, jump from Porto to Inter Milan for Tecatito, great. But that wasn't the thing that I really took most from this interview. It was the idea that Tecatito at club level has really and truly transformed into this carrilero, this like right wing. Yeah. And, you know, it's his agent, so take it with a grain of salt and probably a pretty big one. But he's talking about him as one of the best at that role in Europe. And he's pointing to his assists and this. And then you look at it and you say, wow, yeah, he is a very productive player in that role. And I don't think I've ever thought of Tecatito as that because that's not really how I've ever seen him used for Mexico. But could this be a situation where Tecatito not only makes the jump to an elite level, but does it at a different position and then ends up playing that position for Mexico?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. He's got a 30 million euro release clause. That's going to hinder him at the moment because for outside backs, unless you're a Dani Alves, I don't see post-pandemic a team shelling that kind of money out for a guy who's going to be 28 in January. But in Porto, he's got the statistics. He's got like 17 assists in two seasons. He's a player that plays very well when the game is in front of him. And as a right back, as a carrilero, the game is always in front of you. He's very attack orientated. He's taken to that system, I guess you could say, to that role in a way that few players can transition and really be effective to it. Inter is one of those teams right now that's on the cusp, I would say, of being elite because of their aspirations, their ambitions. If there wasn't an ambition power rankings, they would be at the top. It'd be one of these clubs. So if you can get a player like Tecatito, who I am a firm believer in, I love his game to that kind of level, I think he would be a better player for it. And I do see that transitioning to what is at times the Mexican national team because Tata Martino and under Tata Martino, we've seen a traditional 4-3-3. So you're not really going to get him playing that right back role unless he wants to change something and he goes with, you know, three backs, two forwards. I could definitely see Tecatito. But this is a move that if you're Tecatito, if you're his agent, you 100% welcome because there is a big jump between Porto and what is Inter. And we've seen this many times, many times. Just because you're good at Porto, it doesn't mean you will be good and transition to the next level. And I will use the example of Jackson Martinez from Porto, who was killing it, went to Atletico. And so recently, Hector Herrera, who was, you know, a Porto legend, he was captain for so many years, and then he goes to Atletico and he's hurting for minutes.
Yeah. No, it's interesting with Tecatito because he also has to think about it from the national team standpoint, which is look at the position he plays. It is so stacked with talent. If you're him trying to get on the field or if you're Tata who wants to get him on the field, I'm sorry. There are probably other guys ahead of him in those two wide attacking spots.
Do you remember how that relationship started? Do you remember how Tecatito Corona and Tata Martino and Sergio Conceição relationship started?
A lot of that had to do with Porto.
Yes,
a lot of that,
Conceição, but he was stuck in the middle. But at the end of the day, he's the one who's going to suffer.
Yeah.
Okay? Whether it's with Porto when he leaves or whether it's with El Tri and Tata when he doesn't show up. Okay? Yeah. He will be the one to suffer. So you're talking about that. And I honestly, if you think about the top three right now in Tata's eyes, in the front line, you've got Raul, you've got
Chucky.
Chucky.
Rolo, Pizarro.
That's what I was going to say. He's been sprinkling in Alvarado Tecatito. And Pizarro. Yeah. So does he see those players ahead of Tecatito? I kind of think he does.
Yeah. Well, I think Tecatito could have a chance to beat both those guys out. And pretty much.
I don't know. I do as well. I think he's better than both. But what does Tata think? I think he sees both those players over Tecatito at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So it could be interesting. Maybe we see that sooner than later on that end. All right. So we've talked about Klopp. We've talked about
here it comes.
We talked about Klopp. We talked about all the news that I can think of. We talked about Chicharito. We talked about Wolves. We talked about Jimenez. We talked about the transfers. Let's talk just a little bit here at the very end about Carlos Vela. And I will say this, you know, when your mother yells at you, you do have to, you know, kind of rethink your stance on some stuff, especially when it's my mother. So what I would say is there is a more academic way to have the discussion that we have. And we'll probably have that at some point down the road because I don't think the story's over, right? Right. I think we're going to keep coming back and visiting it. Anyway, recently, Carlos Vela's has a quote that comes out where he says, like, you know, they're kind of somewhat flippantly, I think, and maybe it's the last time I'll use the jersey. Almost in some way teasing, I would say, the idea that his time with the national team might or might not be done. Again, acknowledging that there's a doubt there, but not sorting that doubt out for us. I wonder what you made of the comments.
Read the comment to me.
All right, hold on. Let me pull it up. I was paraphrasing it.
I will do my best. I will do my best to think about it in a Carlos Vela voice. Because when it comes to Carlos Vela, I'm gonna put him on this level of, I guess, threat. If you're a UFC fan, the Henry Cejudo retirement. If you're a basketball fan and a documentary fan, The Last Dance, Michael Jordan saying he won't come back for the, you know, after this year, Phil's gone. It almost feels like he's threatening, teasing, and he wants to come back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like that's my thought is why does it keep coming up? Like why are you – it's like a guy throwing a fishing lure out.
Now, you and I have spoken many times. You can stop looking for it. It's fine.
I'm gonna find it though, but you keep talking.
But what I was going to say is you and I have spoken many times on this platform about whether Carlos Vela would play again for the Mexican national team. And you said, no, he's done. He won't play anymore. And I said, I kind of think he'll play again. But he said he's retired, this and that. The Mexican national team should move on. And you gave a plethora of reasons, all his words of like he's covering up or he's in the way, estorbando. He's in the way of somebody's development and he doesn't want to play anymore and they should move on. But then all of a sudden him saying, hey, it wouldn't be so bad playing in the Olympics, you know. All of a sudden him making these assessments about picking and choosing when he wants to come back to. And I was one of the first ones. I told you this. I think if there's a World Cup in front of him and he's playing at the same level, he's going to say, you know what? I want to play at this World Cup. I just don't want to do the CONCACAF qualifications in Nations League where I got to go to Bermuda.
Oh, we already know that's not going to fly with Tata. Tata said either you're
here. Because that's not going to fly today. Do you think tomorrow if Tata Martino has a World Cup and he says, you know what? This guy is absolutely killing it. What if I just invite him to this tournament? Wait, that people are going to really be upset at me? No, they're going to be saying you should take him. I think Carlos Vela knows this. I think Carlos Vela is using this to his advantage and rightfully so in a smart way if you think about it. If you really think about it.
He's taking a sabbatical. Last of them. He's taking a sabbatical. He's just not publicly calling it that.
And you've got to be very careful with these sabbaticals because as we've seen in CONCACAF circles, Landon Donovan took a sabbatical and Jurgen Klinsmann called his bluff. Jurgen yep. Klinsmann said, nope, that's not going to fly. And Jurgen and many, to the dismay of many, many were upset, said, you aren't going, you weren't part of this.
Well, that was also, he also brought him back and made him a part of it for the World Cup qualifying campaign when he needed him. And then,
I wouldn't say qualifying campaign, I'd say Gold Cup.
Go back and look at those qualifiers, bro. Go back and look at that Mexico US qualifier.
I know, the one where Eddie Johnson scores, Landon scores, yeah, but Gold Cup is when he brought him back. Trust me. That was the clincher.
You know who else took a sabbatical?
Who?
Tim Howard. How'd that end up for the U.S.?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, what I'm saying is it's not apples to apples there, you know? But it's fine. What I'm saying about Carlos Vela is if you want to call it the sabbatical, he's one of these players, and I'll compare him to Landon because I think it makes more sense, where if you take him to a tournament, your team is better for it.
Fair enough. All right, dude. We have literally covered everything that I think we can cover. Like I said, all those news items off the top probably deserve their own episode on how they affect the Mexican national team. We'll probably know more in coming weeks, especially on what's going to happen with World Cup qualifying, because I think that's really the next most important thing for this team, right? We at this point wait for that. And when you think about the World Cup being in the winter now of 2022, it's actually interesting with all of the schedule shift. That 6 months that was going to be awkward now actually kind of lines up.
Yeah, it lines up, but I think it's still awkward. I think this is going to set every national team, every program back. It's going to be of who can, I guess, get acclimated fast enough to this new world post-pandemic qualifications at the world's level, soccer at the world's level, at the elite level. And if the Mexican national team players aren't playing, I mean, if all they're doing is Zoom trainings with their local clubs, oh, man, that's giving the rest of these other teams who are a leg up.
And it's let's end it on this, and it's an important point. The Bundesliga is back, and there are a boatload, and you know this because you and I cover it, of Americans playing in the Bundesliga.
And MLS will soon be back, and if that's the case, that's almost 90% of the pool right there.
The American player pool, which is Mexico's chief rival, is going to be not just very active, but outside the guys who are playing in this MLS tournament, should that come back, the guys who are in the Bundesliga are playing at a really high level, and they're going to be making strides that Mexico...
And they're playing.
Yep, is not going to be making. So before we get out of here, real quick, let people know where they can find you, because you're all over ESPN Deportes and everything else.
Yeah, Punto Picante, Ahora o Nunca, you and I have been doing ESPN FC, a plethora of YouTube videos. You can go to the ESPN FC YouTube and see the videos, and please go to the comments and comment on Sebastian Salazar.
Please don't.
Find us everywhere, brother.
I read every last one. We're soon going to do a YouTube comments, mean comments. It'll be a classic for her. All right, man. Great to see you. Be well. A good hello to your family and for all of our listeners. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on 2 on 3.